Paper 119, section 8. Old single column, page 1317. All right, so we've done the seven pistoles. Now this final section, like I believe I mentioned a time or two, it's this final section that where you, if you really, allow it to blossom into the full expression that they're wanting you to open it, you know, into. It's this last section that where you really begin to recognize how definitively this paper is the fifth of five papers, that you have a Pentateuch of papers here on experiential deity. And we'll also, really clearly bring out how significant all this is relative to that overarching facet of experiential deity, that overarches the three, sort of fundamental facets: the supreme, the ultimate, and the absolute, the mother. Let's see how God the Mother, is the thread that binds the five papers into one paper, just as it's the thread that binds all of experiential deity into one fact. In the same way that God the Father is that thread that binds all of existential deity into one fact. And in a very transcendent way, where the Isle of Paradise is one of those facets in that, full existential picture. Like we pointed out, supreme, ultimate, absolute, sun, spirit, isle. Those three are in parallel. So let's just jump in, and we'll build up and then get to the central paragraph here in this section. Go ahead.
Michael's pistole status.
Post-pistole
status, yeah. After Michael's final and successful bestowal on Urantia, he was not only accepted by the Ancients of Days as sovereign ruler of Nebadon, but he was also recognized by the Universal Father as the established director upon the local universe of his own creation. Upon his return to Salvington, this Michael, the Son of Man and the Son of God, was proclaimed the settled ruler of Nebadon. From Uversa came the eighth proclamation of Michael's sovereignty, while from Paradise came the joint pronouncement of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son constituting this union of God and man, sole head of the universe, and directing the union of days stationed on Salvington to signify his intention of withdrawing to Paradise. The faithfuls of days on the constellation headquarters were also instructed to retire from the councils of the Most Highs. But Michael would not consent to the withdrawal of the Trinity Sons of counsel and cooperation. He assembled them on Salvington and personally requested them to forever remain on duty in Nebadon. They signified their desire to comply with this request to their directors on Paradise, and shortly thereafter there were issued those mandates of Paradise divorcement which forever attached these sons of the central universe to the court of Michael of Nebadon.
Okay. So a couple of things I want to bring out in here. I mean, first of all, just the little factual point, so everyone remembers the context that we're in. When they say upon his return to Salvington, when was that? He does the seventh bestowal. Does everyone remember how the seventh bestowal, wraps up, when they talk about that in detail, in part four. He's effectively, in terms of his Morantia growth,
Sorry. I thought I turned it down. No, I'll turn it off.
In terms of his Morontia growth, he before the ascension, you know, the quote unquote ascension, he's not only gone through all seven mansion worlds, but also Gerasim, and then effectively up to Adentia. You know, in terms of the development in and of his Morontia form and you know, and the related growth of his Morontia character, he's already filled in, because remember he did the sixth bestowal on a constellation world, so the seventh bestowal has to fill in that whole remaining bottom portion. So he does that, and then when he actually finally leaves, by way of Gerasim, he goes to Adentia, and then on to Paradise, to the right hand of the Father, you know, quote unquote, and then back to Salvington. And so 10 days after the Ascension on Pentecost is when he's back on Salvington, on the 28th of May, on Pentecost back then, he's back on Salvington, and that's when the Spirit of Truth is poured out. And so, you know, this is Pentecost we're talking about here, you know, when he's returned to Salvington, the Spirit of Truth is poured out. Recognized by the Universal Father as the established director of the local universe of his own creation. And the first thing he does is overrule the Universal Father and the Eternal Son's order. That should punctuate us, you know. The very first thing that he does, you know, is say, no, they're not going. They're going to stay. Let that sink in, you know, recognize how definitive this is. That's the kind of authority he now wields. It doesn't say that the Father and the Son, recommended, they were directed to return. And he said, no, they're staying. So he's exercising his full authority right away.
Do you really think that's a big deal, or do you think it's just a formality that creates?
It's not like he's somehow in defiance or anything. We think a big deal. Oh my gosh, he just disobeyed. You know, he didn't disobey anything. He just he has that right now. It's no big deal for the Father and the Son. It's not a big deal like that, but. But I just wanted to, that's why they point that out so definitively. They want you to see, that this is the kind of authority that the Father has invested in him. I give you, absolute authority.
You couldn't have done this at the end of the sixth bestowal.
No. As a matter of fact, it's something we didn't mention. They bring it out, in detail when they're talking in paper 120, when they're talking about all the preliminaries of the seventh bestowal. But remember how they mention there, and then they give you all the details from Emmanuel about the commission, Emmanuel's giving Michael there. Before each bestowal, he was given extensive instruction because he needed help about this whole issue of, he doesn't need help to incarnate, but he needs help in exactly how it is that he sets aside the things he needs to set aside and focuses with the precision that he needs to focus in order to go through each of those seven different engagements of will, if you will, Father, Son, Spirit, Father, Son, those whole seven different facets of engaging Father, Son, Spirit. When he's doing the Father, it isn't just automatic. Emmanuel is giving him all those details. So, that's just a good example of what was happening before this point. He's very much. It's like, well, okay, I would never presume, instruct me, please. Okay, well, now it's, I'm in charge. And it's not a presumption. It's an assumption. You know, he's assuming that which he, you know, he's grabbing a hold of that which he is. He has now incorporated the fullness of supreme type deity into his being. He is the vision required to make such definitive, to take such definitive steps.
What's the difference between a presumption and assumption?
Oh, yeah, well, if you presume, you know, I mean, it's like, well, you know, I think that I can, you know, well, you're presuming, but if you assume, if you grab a hold of it, because it literally is there, it actually is there and can be grabbed a hold of, you aren't just pretending that it's there and you're grabbing a hold of it. It's actually there and you're grabbing a hold of it and running with it. Just a couple of little factual points to throw in case that someone wasn't quite understanding why they were talking about these things, these issues this way. You know, they called them the Trinity Sons, the Union of Days and the Faithfulness of Days. I don't know if you remember that you've got a group of beings that are called stationary sons of the Trinity. You know, it's all of the Supreme Trinity personalities, all the of days beings, basically, and then like divine counselors, and you know those all together are stationary sons of the Trinity, and so sometimes they'll just refer to them shorthand as Trinity sons. In case you're going, well, who's the Trinity sons? I thought they were talking about and the same thing. So it doesn't mean Trinity teacher sons. Even though you might call them Trinity Sons too, for short, this is stationary sons of the Trinity that are being referred to as Trinity Sons. And if you were also wondering, when it says they signified their desire, you know, the Trinity Sons, to comply with this request to their directors on paradise. Who are their directors on paradise? Because the grand universe is, far from complete yet, there are lots of unions of days and faithfuls of days that haven't gone out to local universes and constellations yet because they aren't there yet. You know, those local universes haven't been started yet. So you have these reserve cores of unions of days and faithfuls of days, and those reserve cores are the directors that they're referring to. So just in case you were going, well, you know, is there some being they haven't revealed that, you know, if you're noticing the detail.
So these guys can exchange, they can function in either role. They could be a director and then they could be out there.
I mean, obviously the ancients of days and the, and whatnot, the ones for the super universes, the major sectors and minor sectors, they're all out there. But the unions and faithfuls, no.
I was curious about from Yversa came the eighth program.
Oh, yeah. So you have the first one was when he, 300 billion years ago, when he arrived on Salvington, when he came out from paradise and arrived on Salvington with the thousand tertia of him and, of course, the creative spirit. There was issued the first proclamation. So 300 billion years ago, you have that. And then, after the first bestowal is the second proclamation, et cetera. So that's why it's eight and not seven. So now the Spirit of Truth is poured out and Michael is functioning with full sovereignty. And the first thing he does is keep all of these Trinity Sons around because he obviously has grand plans for them.
How many are there then?
There's the one union of days, and then there's a hundred constellations, so there's 100 faithfuls of days. Another thing too that you can obviously, think about is, especially in our constellation, we still have, the rebellion hasn't been dealt with. And, so you can just imagine there's some assistance that they're providing you with that.
Chris, you mean dealt with, mean resolved.
Adjudicated.
Yeah, adjudicated.
We're resolving it.
Yeah, right. But, it hasn't been officially adjudicated.
I love the way that they use the word shortly.
Yeah.
They should have used the word instantly.
Yeah, right. I mean, again, we've touched on this. You got to remember, this is part of the mystery of the incarnation. The, with this ability to cross these distances,
And it's mostly formalities.
Yeah, and in mind-boggling ways. In the case of, because we have the part four, we've got all those details. We know it was May 18th that he ascended, the last time he disappeared. 18th was, and then the 28th was Pentecost. So, we're talking 10 days. Because you remember how, we've talked about that. You've got two sets of 40 days. You've got the 40 days that he's doing the Marantia thing, and then there's another 40 days that's overlapping that ends at Pentecost. The apostles first go into hiding at the beginning of that second 40 days, and then they come out of hiding on Pentecost. So you've got this 10-day shift there. So now what?
It required almost 1 billion years of Urantia time to complete the bestowal career of Michael and to effect the final establishment of his supreme authority in the universe of his own creation. Michael was born a creator, educated an administrator, trained an executive, but he was required to earn his sovereignty by experience. And thus has your little world become known throughout all Nebadon as the arena wherein Michael completed the experience which is required of every Paradise Creator's son before he is given unlimited control and direction of the universe of his own making. As you ascend the local universe, you will learn more about the ideals of the personalities concerned in Michael's previous bestowals.
And just that last sentence there, I alluded to it a couple times, if I remember right, as we were going through the bestowals, how, as you're going up, like they're saying there, Gavalia wasn't, allowed to give us all the details, but you're going to, learn all the details. It's, a very important part of your education, obviously, from what they're saying here. None of us are going to be here that long, so we'll be moving towards that education soon. The other thing in here is where the real meat starts to pick up. They're pointing out, like I've mentioned several times, because I was foreshadowing this section. Establishment of his supreme authority. When they talk about his sovereignty there in that next sentence, it's supreme sovereignty. He has supreme sovereignty now, and that's just not it's not like when humans want to self-aggrandize, they call themselves supreme poobah or whatever. This is not just a word that makes him sound big. This is a literal fact. He literally has incorporated the deity of the supreme, a measure of the deity of the supreme into his being. He's a different type of individuality now. That personality is engaging a different type of individuality. He's not a creator son, he's a master son. Okay? So that's what they're going to, I stress that because that's what they're really going to, draw out here is this whole issue of his relationship to the deity of the supreme. Okay.
In completing his creature bestowals, Michael was not only establishing his own sovereignty, but it was also augmenting the evolving sovereignty of God the Supreme. In the course of these bestowals, the Creator Son not only engaged in a descending exploration of the various natures of creature personality, but he also achieved the revelation of the variously diversified wills of the paradise deities, whose synthetic unity, as revealed by the supreme creators, is revelatory of the will of the supreme being.
Okay. Just so it doesn't get lost in the next paragraph, this last statement here is pointing out something a little bit more than what you initially might think, because we've talked about it so much, these seven, you know, the seven master spirits and those seven different flavors of will. Notice how it purposely say, as revealed by the supreme creators. So all the supreme creators. To think about it all together, you know, not just the master spirits, but the ancients of days and all the creator sons and creative mother spirits, or you know, master sons and creative mother spirits. All of them together are, and you know, eventually when it's all completed, we'll finish the picture of revealing the will of the supreme being. You know, when you take the will of the supreme being, who's an absonite, you know, individual, and you downstep that down into time, you know, into the finite domain, that singular will of that one being is expressed in this extremely complex spectrum that evolves into existence, you know, of all those supreme creators, you know. So you know, just kind of thinking of that monolithic will, spreading down into all these fingers of expression. And we know that we've got, an overriding personal purpose of expression, the universal mother, but all of the supreme creators are also revelatory of the will of the supreme being.
Yeah. So, yep. What that makes me think of, you're talking about, he was the 600 whatever, mm-hmm. first level master son.
Yeah. Creator son, yeah.
The decision as to where and how to do not only his bestowals, but mm-hmm. his entire
right.
creation.
Right, right.
Or if he's in direct contact with the Supreme Being in some way to say, okay, now in this phase of the universe, I'm going to bestow myself, or you know, whatever.
They talk about how that happens. It's the key there of that, you know, that linkage that you're obviously recognizing needs to be there, yeah. of how sort of it gets downstepped. Mm-hmm. That's the architects of the Master Universe. Uh-huh. Remember, it's really the master architects that are downstepping the plans. Michael is executing them. They point that out a couple times in the book. You know that technically, you know, it's not like he's just going, well, let's just think randomly here. What the heck am I going to do in terms of creating? He's very much following. What the master architects have projected down. Remember how I don't know if you were here when we talked about that.
Yeah.
They use that word projected to point out how the master architects are bringing that expression down.
Well, 300 billion years ago, they had X plans,
mm-hmm.
and he might have been looking forward to, you know, Pentecost. And saying, okay, well, in a few hundred billion years, this is what's going to happen. But nonetheless, things in a free will universe don't necessarily follow.
Right. I mean, right. It's not a predestination set of plans. It's just, you know, he's working within a framework that was established. Okay? You know, and that framework guarantees what you were concerned about, that that when all is said and done, his local universe. Is what it needs to be, both things and beings, to be the completed facet of the supreme that it needs to be. Yeah.
That framework established by the architects of the mm-hmm. universe is really a set of potentials, isn't it?
In one sense, but all, I mean, I use the word framework very purposely because remember, they're literally involved in downstepping the infinite capacity deity. It's literally framework. When you think about it in precise terms, there's boundaries, if you will, however literally you want to metaphorically think of it, within which he works. In a very parallel way to those architects are also involved in getting the capacity downstepped that literally is the bounds that within which the Creative Mother Spirit is ubiquitous. I mean, there's a downstepped expression of capacity there that she then fills. She didn't, just arbitrarily choose that capacity or didn't come out with a body that only was that big. She comes into relationship with that downstepped expression of capacity. It becomes part of her, and it literally manifests spatially as the boundaries of her presence. Okay, so in the same very literal way, Michael is working within a definitive set of boundaries, that aren't just, literally spatially. there are conceptual boundaries within which he's functioning that are literally related to a facet of deity on high, the infinite capacity.
So does it make sense to relate to that as 1/100,000th of the seventh master spirit's set of frameworks?
Yeah, I just wanted to see, I think I can find it here. Yeah, the sons of God may choose the realms of their creator activities, but these material creations were originally projected and planned by the paradise architects of the master universe. And then there's another spot too where they just say, it's certainly any and to the fullness of your comprehension, it's fine for you to think of him as the creator of the local universe. But if you want to really start getting in detail, there's some antecedent things in play.
So isn't that analogous to the way a planetary prince works within Michael's framework?
Yeah. Or how you'll work in within a framework. We've talked about this a number of times, this anarchistic world here, you got all these people think, well, boy, when I get to the mansion worlds, I'm going to, show them how government should be run. It's like, no, you go into a system, you have no say, okay? You either conform or you cease to exist. You need to harmonize yourself with the cosmos, and there's a very definitive, downstepped expression of the cosmos, that is manifested institutionally even there on those mansion worlds. You plug in. You're not self-governing by any stretch of the imagination.
The choosing of this planet and its plight, it's narrowed down to, that's the place I got to go. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, I got all these places to go. I can go to Paris or Mogadishu.
Yeah. Just like he was saying there, like they've told us, he has a very definitive twofold thing in play with every one of these choices, and they're on all the decisions that, that come under that, he's thinking about what he's just doing as an individual descending down, but he's also thinking about, how this fits into his piece of the big grand universe puzzle. Everything he does, can't just be about him. It has to be in conformity with his job as directing this to end up being the precise, perfect piece of the supreme puzzle. Very much.
As he well manifested, the will of the Father was the big deal.
Right, that was the final piece he's putting in. Yeah. okay, so let's get into this whole issue about the deity and the supremacy.
These various will aspects of the deities are eternally personalized in the differing natures of the seven master spirits, and each of Michael's bestowals was peculiarly revelatory of one of these divinity manifestations. On his Melchizedek bestowal, he manifested the united will of the Father, Son, and Spirit. On his Lenanadec bestowal, the will of the Father and the Son. On the Adamic bestowal, he revealed the will of the Father and the Spirit. On the Seraphic bestowal, the will of the Son and the Spirit. On the Uversa mortal bestowal, he portrayed the will of the conjoint actor. On the Marantia mortal bestowal, the will of the eternal Son. And on the Urantia material bestowal, he lived the will of the universal Father, even as a mortal of flesh and blood.
Okay, the one thing I want to point out, since we've been talking about that the whole time we've been going through this paper. For those of you who are familiar, really familiar with the book, know that when you go to the next paper, when you go to paper 120, there's a paragraph in there that restates this exact same list. Just one a little simple factual point of reminder that this is not a preface to the Jesus Papers. It's very separate. This is the fifth of a Pentateuch on, basically God the Mother. The next paper is the first paper of a whole different game, different revelatory commission, in play. But some of these things, are repeated because the person that's writing that first paper needs to set some context. But it just reminds you of that it's not really repeated as much as it is just separate. There's the list, and we know that all comes together by him engaging the will flavors of the seven master spirits. He's able to make himself as a master son. One of the of these downstepped little fingers of supreme-like will that fits into the whole bigger context of the supreme creators. He doesn't have to somehow sync up with every other master son and every creative mother spirit or what. He can get his part of the picture in play by syncing up with the seven master spirits. Okay.
The completion of these seven bestowals resulted in the liberation of Michael's supreme sovereignty and also in the creation of the possibility for the sovereignty of the supreme in Nebadon. On none of Michael's bestowals did he reveal God the supreme, but the sum total of all seven bestowals is a new Nebadon revelation of the supreme being.
Okay. Now, okay, so there you have it, stated again, supreme sovereignty. And we've talked about this a little bit. On none of Michael's bestowals did he reveal God the supreme. And the first lies, well, yeah, of course, because you got to get all seven of them before that's in play. But, remember that he was technically done with that at the baptism. And we've talked about this. He could have revealed God the Supreme during the seventh bestowal after the baptism, but decided not to. That's the six great decisions. Making that overarching decision to not reveal God the Supreme. Okay? Not to manifest power and personality as one, which is manifesting God the Supreme. But the fact was there, like we said, the fact is there, and that's why occasionally the power couldn't help but manifest, because there is no separation between the power and the personality. If the personality definitively engages somehow, the power is right there with it. It's not like he can choose to somehow, let's put the power back here. It's creature, creator, unifying personality. It's a power personality synthesis, you know, the supreme type deity. It's just there. Yeah.
So, Chris, would you might say that he didn't reveal God the Supreme, but he did in many ways in showing God the Mother, but not distinguishing that between God the Father and God the Mother?
Well, and again, we're not talking about God the Mother. We're talking about God the Supreme.
Okay.
The six great decisions is, no, I'm going to continue to just, follow the will of the Father and do what I've always done as a, I'm a revelation of God the Father. I'm coming down as a Creator Son from paradise. I'm going to continue in the mode of my seventh bestowal, in following the will of just the Father, and I'm going to, just be who I am. I am true God. I am a revelation of God the Father. He who has seen me has seen the Father. That's just the fact of what I am, now that it's post-baptism. So you've got... So you have this liberation, see, of Michael's supreme sovereignty. It's liberated. He has supreme type deity as part of him. So it's now manifesting as a master son. And he goes forward through this second half of his finite career, slowly coordinating this local universe into a perfect supreme type puzzle piece. That's the possibility for the sovereignty of the Supreme in Nevadon. He's slowly working to make that happen, to make this part of the grand universe take on not mother-like character, not father-like character, supreme-like character, so that it synchronizes with God the Supreme. And eventually, when all of them are synchronized like that, then the Supreme just grabs a hold of the whole thing, because he can. It's now made grippable to him. Every one of the local universes has been tuned so that he can grip it, and then he grips the whole grand universe. And all those that were involved in that tuning process then go on to their next jobs. Unless there are a few of them that continue on as the assistants to the Supreme, to the Supreme Being, I should really say. Okay, but so that's all still kind of what we'd expect. We've been talking about that a lot. But let's start to bring in a little bit more of the picture here. That last little part, but the sum total of all seven bestowals is a new Nebadon revelation of the Supreme Being. Okay? Like we said, you can think of him now, if you take the totality of the Supreme type deity, you've got this downstepped expression of it, this localized expression of it. Oh, well, that should remind you of something. We've talked about that. We just mentioned it a little bit ago, as a matter of fact. Now, you take all of the mother-type deity, and, at least let's bring it down to the level of the total finite, but it isn't just there. There isn't just the universal mother. There are downstepped expressions within the finite of the mother-type deity. And for instance, this local universe has one, there's one of those downstepped expressions of the mother type deity. It's been there since the primary eruption. You had this being whose self, the type of self of a creative spirit is just the spirit type deity. It's a downstepped expression of the infinite spirit. Okay? Then at the primary eruption, another type of deity gets bonded onto that. So that just like the Father-Son, now you have a parallel, the spirit type and the mother type deity. Yeah, you have this downstepped expression of the mother type deity. Notice how parallel, see, the picture is now. You know, where you've downstepped the mother type deity to her, and you've downstepped the supreme type deity to him now. So this would suggest that there's probably something that happens with her as well at this point. Because they obviously have come into a greater synchrony now. Well, what is that? If you go to, paper 34, we're talking about the Creative Mother Spirit. I'll just read you this, the first paragraph of section 2 up there. Having undergone marked personality metamorphosis at the time of life creation, that's the primary eruption, the divine minister thereafter functions as a person and cooperates in a very personal manner with the Creator Son in the planning and management of the extensive affairs of their local creation. Okay, before I go read the rest of it, just so, you know, remember we've talked about when you think about the third source and center, I mean, the conjoint actor is the personality side, the infinite spirit, technically, that's the impersonal side. So when you downstep the infinite spirit as a creative spirit, it's very impersonal expression. Okay, but you bond in this mother type deity, and now personality can really grab a hold of this and begin to manifest in a way that it couldn't before. Well, before, remember, she's a third source personality. Okay, so it's a, but it's that third source personality now begins to take on a little bit more of something that that at least the Creator Son, is engaging in a way that we could more easily comprehend. More in a first source personality-like way, okay? So that's that first step. However, see, it says, to many universe types of being, even this representation of the infinite spirit may not appear to be wholly personal during the ages preceding the final Michael bestowal. But subsequent to the elevation of the Creator Son to the sovereign authority of a Master Son, the Creative Mother Spirit becomes so augmented in personal qualities as to be personally recognized by all contacting individuals. Okay, so think about you. Okay, you can't contact her now because you're inside her womb. Okay, but when you graduate out of her mindal womb as a first stage spirit and can turn around and contact her, okay, you'll have a very personal experience, whereas prior to 2,000 years ago, all those individuals who were graduating out of Nebadon turned around and nothing very personal there that they could engage. But now there's something very definitively personal. Imagine how much a lot of those beings are desiring. I'm over here in this other super universe, but sometimes I'd love to go back to my super universe and say hello to Mom now that she's fairly personally contactable. It's again another reminder of how different things are now to the way they used, to the way they used to be just 2,000 years ago. 200 billion years of ascenders were in a very different mode than they are now. They're getting something much more definitive, then it's the experience is a lot like when you're a graduate spirit, when you go from a third stage to a fourth stage spirit, when you go from the seventh to the sixth circuit of Avona, that's the point that you're birthed out of the spirit womb, and you can turn around and say hi personally to the master spirit for the first time. You and I will have had a similar experience prior to that. Unlike those 2,000, prior to 2,000 years ago.
So what about, is there an analogous thing to the completion of Arvanta? To a new level of recognition?
That way? We know that when the grand universe is settled in light and life, you've got to turning around and saying hi to the Supreme Being.
Right.
Okay. What else might go on? It's hard to say. There's a lot of unrevealed things, that they allude to a couple times. But yeah.
What page is that?
Oh, that's page 375 in the single column. It's the first paragraph, section 2, paper 34.
I hope we're going to read page 369, Proclamation of Equality.
Right. See, you know, and we know that's all in play. And see now. Just, I'm glad you mentioned that. So, just, you know, we don't need to go into all the details, but just remember that, reading that, and like now think about it more literally than you ever did before. Yeah, see, they're much more literally equal. It's not just, you know, we haven't really wanted to think of ourselves as equal, but now I guess we're going to. You know, there's nothing arbitrary about it. They don't declare that until they are that equality. He has. You know, he's taken the big step in many ways in bringing in the supreme type deity so that he can come into full, you know, parallel equality with her. And then she, you know, and she reflects that step that he took and begins to manifest in a way that she didn't before. In many, you might even want to think about it as prior to that, it's more of an absonite like God the Mother expression that she has, and that's why it doesn't come off as personal down here. But see, the fact that he gets a grip on the Supreme means that in parallel, it becomes more of God the Supreme functioning as God the Mother rather than God the Ultimate functioning as God the Mother, so that when she's, you know, she can manifest more definitively than as the Mother, see? Okay, so, you know, think about that God the Mother, you know, God the Mother starts, you know, at the absolute level, and it's being downstepped, okay? And so it more definitively, you know, begins to manifest in the finite domain in parallel.
If we're consecrating our minds to the Mother, how do we make that personal if we can't contact the creative Mother Spirit until we're...
Spirit well, beings? It's... there's a personal purposive phenomenon in play. I mean, the Holy Spirit is her personal spiritual ministry. It's not just her merely spiritual ministry. It's a personal spiritual ministry. You're engaging her. It's just, you know, you're within that. So, you know, it's not until you're outside that you, oh, and then there's the point of identification of that personality, and now I'm engaging it, you know, from the outside. You're immersed in that right now. So you're engaging it. It's just you can't bring her personality to a focus in front of you because you're inside of her. You know?
But if you think of her as Michael's wife, for instance,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I've been cultivating trying to think of her alongside with him.
Yeah.
So that I'm thinking of parents now, and I've never really thought like that before.
Yeah. Just... You start thinking about, even if you can't have some sort of an epiphany experience of this, the Holy Spirit is now even more definitively of a personal spiritual ministry. And the Spirit of Truth is a personal spiritual ministry. The two are, you know, are coordinate. And, you know, think about trying to not just engage them mindily. Try to, you know, even if you don't have, like I said, if you don't have a definitive experience of it personally, try to consecrate yourself as a person to engaging those two ministries. Because that potential is there. Okay? You know what that will manifest as, you know, is, you know, again, is reflects, you know, a better understanding of what you mean by personality. You will have not just an experience of you know, a progressing or a perfecting like experience with it, a mindal or a spiritual experience with it. You'll actually have a harmonizing experience with it. The more you engage those as a person, the more that engagement results in not just you know, you moving down the progressing road or the perfecting road, but actually moving down the harmonizing road. harmony of the threefold actuality being a result of that engagement, when it's more personal like that. So it won't just be, you know, like I can engage the third cosmic intuition and get a greater recognition of values just in and of itself, but what if I have, you know, if that greater recognition of values is in the context of a harmonized threefold recognition, and that manifests as some very definitively super additive, transcendent thing. It isn't just more and more values. You know, I'm not just more and more idealistic in my consciousness, for instance. I manifest a harmonization of facts and ideals, you know, and actually bring that into play into my life, gain wisdom from it and whatnot. You know, it's like, wow, that was really more than just a greater sense of ideals. That actually, you know, came out of me and engaged the world and plugged in and had external consequences. And the only way you can do that is because you have a personality that can harmonize the spiritual ideals with the material facts. And your faith begins to live and manifest in the world.
Soul growth is literally the growth of qualitative reality. And as you become,
and the ability to manifest, like I say, because it's harmony, it's a weaving.
Manifest, you know? And the recognition which is the personalized thing, it almost sounds like all of these qualities they're talking about all of a sudden come into play. It's not like they're just, oh, okay, here's a bunch of qualities that you didn't deserve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's been working on those as well over the eons. And now they've just,
Right. And there's no delay. I mean, she's right there, boom. As soon as the two are in sync.
Yeah.
They're working together and they simultaneously have a new manifestation.
Right. And so for us to actually literally be able to see her, once we turn around.
Or recognize her as a person, really contact her personally, not just, wow, I can really feel that spirit, you engage her personally. So before we read the next paragraph, just add a parallel ending to that previous paragraph. So he is a new Nebadon revelation of the Supreme Being. She is a new Nebadon revelation of the Universal Mother. Yeah. You know, there's a particular Nebadon flavor, right? See? Of that revelation. You know, there's a Nebadon flavor of the Universal Mother and a Nebadon flavor of the Supreme Being. Okay, and now they're both expressing that. See? And, you know, and remember, those are both individuality names. You know, so I purposely used those. The Universal Mother and the Supreme Being, those are individuality names, not the unity names. And being able to get outside of her and engage her as a definitive personal individual, see, that's what I'm getting at. You know, it's a downstepped expression of that, just as the Universal Mother is a definitive personal individual. Now, so now is she, a downsteps expression of that. A Nebadon revelation of the Universal Mother.
What was the requisite for the primary eruption?
Oh, well, that's just, once they have all of the basic physical, material, energy stuff in play. Yeah, the stage, it's not complete, but it's set to its initial state that it needs to be, so that you can now think about getting inhabited worlds going and having Gabriel and all kinds of seraphim and whatnot.
That flash is like visible from the center of
the super. So there's a spiritual flash, but the key is not so much what you see, but what you don't see. You know, there's a, you don't see the deity, but there's literally a facet of deity that, you know, engages this other facet, this, you know, the spirit type deity, together as one now. Okay, so now this next little tiny paragraph, seemingly tiny little, okay, this is the meat. This is where we're going to really finally put the whole picture together that we've been wanting to put together for a long time. And this is where it really relates to us, too. This is where you'll begin to really see yourself in the new context that they're wanting you to be able to see yourself in. The same time that you see Creator Son in an even bigger context.
In the experience of descending from God to man, Michael was concomitantly experiencing the ascent from partiality of manifestability to supremacy of finite action and finality of the liberation of his potential for absolute function. Michael, a creator son, is a time-space creator, but Michael, a sevenfold master son, is a member of one of the divine core constituting the Trinity ultimate.
Okay, now, the first thing I want to remind you of is what Gavalia has reminded us of over and over and over again. Remember, he's under very, very extreme limitations about what he said, but he wants to push it to the maximum. And he did. He said he did. So you want to look for very subtle little things. And that's why there's subtle things in here that are allowing you to, you know, to go to the bigger picture. Before we go into those subtle things, though, let's just notice how carefully they choose words. Concomitantly, okay? The literal meaning of that word is with attendance, basically. Okay, remember that was I was trying to make that point. You know, that's why in that when we put down the seven bestowals, we didn't just have the master spirits, in parallel to the seven bestowals. We had the seven, sets of attendants. Okay, that's why they chose that word, instead of something a little bit more colloquial, so that you can see Michael with those attendants was experiencing the ascent from partiality, okay, to supremacy. Okay, just noticing the careful choice, the literal meaning of that word, being to have, rooted in attend, the root attend. Again, just, like we suspected, they aren't just there because, they're a very fundamental part of making that, bringing supreme type deity into play, to tuning into, without them, he can't tune. It's concomitantly, very definitively, it allows him to tune in. Okay, now, so that last thing they mentioned, as a member of one of the divine core constituting the Trinity ultimate. Okay. Notice that he says Trinity ultimate, not ultimate Trinity. Remember, we figured that out when we were carefully going through total deity. That isn't just because they get tired of saying it one way and they say it the other way, just so they aren't reading it. When it's Trinity ultimate or Trinity absolute, that's the unity viewpoint designation. Whereas ultimate Trinity, absolute Trinity, paradise Trinity, those are the individuality viewpoint designations. So the way he chooses to just point to that Trinity, that first experiential Trinity, he's wanting you to look top down, take the unity viewpoint. Well, we know when we're talking about the Supreme, the Almighty's the bottom up flow, the Mother's the top down flow. Now, and we know very definitively now too that how the relationship between Trinity and Mother, they're very intimately linked in all ways. So, see, just the way he worded that, you know, if you've gotten yourself up to speed, he's putting you in, think about mother. Think about the mother aspect of this picture. Think about the unity viewpoint view here. And I won't explain yet, but the subtle little clue is the liberation of a potential. Okay. What exactly? Okay. So let's lay out the full parallel. I mean, we've pointed out when we read it back in Personality Survival, you know, they say, now remember, you have two halves to your career in the finite. First half from here to paradise, where you become a finaliter, and then a second half. You know, and we've talked about that a lot. Okay, let's lay out all of the different pieces. Okay, so relative to those two halves. So now, first of all, you're a creature. Okay, when you're a creature, you're always seeking. Okay, being a creature puts you forever in a seeking mode. So that first half of your career, everyone knows what you're seeking. You're God the Father seeking during the first half. Okay. Now, even as a finaliter, you're still a creature. Okay, so you're seeking something there too. Well, you know, there's lots of places they talk about that in the book. All of us creatures are seeking, you know, the culmination of the grand universe. We're seeking God the Supreme. We're God the Supreme seeking in our second half of our career. So we're God the Father seeking, and then we're God the Supreme seeking. Okay. Now, we're also experiential beings, which means we're always acquiring something. Okay? And we've talked about that when we were, you know, when we really developed God the Mother, and they brought that out in, you know, in these papers, these last five papers we've been reading. You know, as you're going, as you're seeking the Father, what are you acquiring during that whole journey? You're God the Mother acquiring during that whole journey. Okay? God the Father seeking, God the Mother acquiring. So that as a finaliter, you know, you now possess that. Come back to that rest of that story in a second. But let's just, you know, the other leg, you know, I'm still an experiential being as a finaliter, so I'm still acquiring something. What am I acquiring as I'm seeking God the Supreme? Well, I'm God the Supreme acquiring. That's what I'm trying to do. So at the same time I'm seeking, I'm acquiring. So that, you know, I can bring myself into full synchrony with the Supreme when all is said and done, you know, with the finite. Okay, now there's one other thing in play. The rest of the story there with God the Mother. What started this journey? God the Father put an adjuster within me. He potentialized me. Okay? He potentialized me not only to seek the source of that, but he potentialized me to acquire God the Mother nature. Just like he talked about the adjuster, you know, is acquiring God the Mother nature, that experiential nature that's bonding onto that existential core of the adjuster. You know, and once we fuse, we're doing that process together. This God, the Mother acquiring. We were potentialized to do that by him giving us an adjuster. Without that adjuster, you know, you don't have that potential. Okay, so you complete that first leg of your journey. You've acquired the full measure of God the Mother that you can acquire, and they've alluded to that. We talked about that. You now have been potentialized again. You've been potentialized to be able to seek God the Supreme and eventually find him. Okay. But you know, there's also when you know when, because you possess that, you now have a potential. You're not a creator being, but you have a potential that's hard to even imagine right now. You are not a creator at that point, but you are a trinitizer. As a finality, you're a trinitizer. It's kind of like a creator, only it's experiential deity related rather than existential deity related. Okay?
A new class.
You're a trinitizer. And a trinitizer is like a creator, in that a creator is always revealing. You know, just like a creature is always seeking, a creator is always revealing. Okay? You go out from paradise revealing God the Mother. And while you're seeking and acquiring God the Supreme Nature, you know, you're revealing God the Mother. And you manifest that immediately by the very fact that you can engage the whole. You go to all seven super universes. You know, that's a direct expression of the fact that you have acquired a measure of the relationship to God the Mother, the individuality of the whole. Okay? Yeah. And then when you start thinking about it, it's like, whoa, and on a very high level too, because I haven't gotten the Supreme yet. So in many ways, see, I'm engaging it almost in an absentite-like way. I'm engaging the whole, and then over the course of my finality life, I'm slowly going to synchronize with all the downstepped expressions of universe, you know, mother likeness, of the mother type deity. As I go around all the seven super universes. So I engage that whole first, and then I, over time, engage the parts. And in the process of engaging those parts, those downstepped expressions of the mother type deity, that has the side effect that I'm acquiring relationship to the Supreme until finally I find the Supreme. So that's your entire journey. See, and the keys here, you know, there's God the Father in play, God the Mother, and God the Supreme. Because you're finite being. Okay? But the Father and the Mother, the overarching facets, they're the fundamental facets that are in play. And then the specific facet, because you're in the finite phase right now, is God the Supreme. So all these different things, you know, seeking, revealing, and acquiring, you know, just figure out, is it, okay, which one of those? So I'm God the Father seeking, God the Supreme seeking. God the Mother acquiring, God the Supreme acquiring. And then also God the Mother revealing. Well, finaliters are parallel to Creator Sons. I should be able to tell that whole story with Creator Sons too, in parallel. What's the reciprocal expression of everything I just said? What's the Creator Son expression of all that? Okay. He comes out from paradise. He's a creator. Creators are always revealing, like I said. Okay. He comes out revealing. He's God the Father revealing. Okay. And I said, well, isn't he Father and Son type deity? Yeah, but remember, we're talking about the overarching facet. He's existential deity revealing. Okay, he's God the Father revealing. Okay, and they just talked about it, you know, right here. Which one of these? Oh yeah, the previous one where they literally said, reveal God the Supreme. I mean, so in the second half of his finite career here, he's God the Supreme revealing, God the Father revealing. God the Supreme revealing, because he's still a creator as a master son. Okay? Well, he's also an experiential being, just like you and I. So he's always acquiring. Okay, so it's the first half of his career. What's he acquiring? Well, we've been reading about it. That's what this whole paper is about. He's God the Supreme acquiring. Okay? Now, once he's acquired that, he has a potential he didn't have before. Okay, well, obviously he has a potential now to be God the Supreme revealing, just like we had the potential to be God the Mother revealing. But there's another, you know, there's more to the potential than just that. and that's why they had the rest of it, his potential for absonite function. You know, he's moving towards, you know, the absonite, just like we are as finaliters moving towards the absonite. You know, and we had the potential to acquire, you know, a measure of the nature of God the Supreme. Can you already guess? What potential does he have now? As he moves out, he's God the Mother acquiring. Okay? Because he has to eventually synchronize with the fullness of the Trinity Ultimate, the Mother-like phenomenon. That's where he's headed. Yeah. So he's, you know, God the Supreme acquiring, God the Mother acquiring, and of course, he now, just like, because we're a trinitizer once we become a finaliter, we've got this new thing that we can reveal. When he acquires the measure of God the Supreme, he's got a new thing that he couldn't do before too. The Supreme type deity is creature, creator, unifying deity. He's got creatureness. Okay? He can seek. Yeah. See? He's seeking God the Mother. Okay? He's acquiring God the Mother. He's seeking God the Mother. Okay? He can now seek because he's a creature. He doesn't just reveal because he's a creator. Okay? That's his whole story. Okay? See, he's God the Father revealing, God the Supreme revealing, God the Supreme acquiring, God the Mother acquiring, and God the Mother seeking. Okay? He's seeking synchrony in the Trinity Ultimate. He has to acquire a relationship with God the Mother to do that. And notice how he's doing the reciprocal of what we're doing in the second half of his career. In the second half of our career, we started kind of at the, you know, sort of the absonite, and we're moving down into the, you know, in relationship with the downstep things. He starts, does he start with a definitive, localized relationship with God the Mother? Yeah, we just talked about that. It's called the Creative Mother Spirit. He's wedded to her, you know. Okay? So he starts with this definitive relationship, one of these downstepped expressions of the Mother. And then he's seeking to gain relationship with the whole expression. I mean, even as a master son, is he going all around the grand universe telling them what to do? No. He's here. But we can go all around in our second half, because we're going top down relative to the Mother, and he's going bottom up relative to the Mother. See, we're always, you know, reciprocal expressions.
Right.
Okay?
Fundamental. Creature
created. Right. We're always, you know, and all this complexity, see, it's always reflecting, like we said, I mean, God the Supreme is behind all this, and the fact that, like they said, it's very important for you to get both the individuality viewpoint and the unity viewpoint in play. You have to start to have an understanding of things with a bi-directional flow, because everything is like that, because we're all within the Supreme. Everything has this bi-directional flow character to it, and there's no way you can put all the pieces together unless you fundamentally are seeking an understanding in that context. So now you have it. The reason, you know, this is about God the Mother, because that's the big point. You know, the whole God the Supreme acquiring, you know, thing is just, it's just so that he has the potential to do the God the Mother thing. This paper is very much part of the other four, the Pentateuch on God the Mother. Eh? That's what it's all about for him. That's what a master son is doing. Master son is seeking God the Mother. Now, the fact that you've already found God the Mother, no wonder finaliters go out into local universes and are intimately involved in that. See, they're kind of the attendants, you know, with all these creator sons where God, they're helping all these master sons find that which they seek.
Concomitantly.
Right. Concomitantly. You know? I mean, and now, see, now that you know what, a huge thing is in play, think about what Lucifer said about the finaliters. You know? They debauch themselves with all that, only to go back, right back to the lowly place, you know? No, okay? They're so beyond what Lucifer can even comprehend.
He was living in
flatland. Right. I mean, they've actually acquired a grip on God the Mother at the grand universe level. Okay? They're way ahead of Mike, you know, the Michael sons in that regard. Now, the Michael sons are way ahead of those finalities in the God the Supreme part of the picture.
Right.
You know? But the two are working...
They're complementary.
Working concomitantly. Yeah. You know? We're attending one another in this twofold journey.
All you said when you were talking about Christ Michael, and he's not going to all of a sudden be out there without her. You know, he's not. They're acquiring it together.
Yeah.
So it's a silent partner kind of thing. So.
Yeah. Think about how I already alluded to that.
Yeah.
Just put it together. Remember, we were talking about Michael, you know, making sure that the local universe synchronizes with the Supreme. Well, she is the local universe. Okay, where she ends, Nevadon ends. She defines. I mean, you know. So yeah, see, she is, you know, synchronizing herself. You know. Yeah.
He can't do it without.
Yeah,
him,
yeah. It's so totally.
Great romance.
Right. Okay. See, so that tiny little paragraph. See, that's what they want you to get out of there. They want you to have done what we've been doing for, you know, a long time now. They want you to take the suggestions back there in deity and reality, not just take, you know, what's on the face of the paper. They want you to notice that they say, what we're going to say is a suggestion. See if you can run with the suggestion. Okay? If you run with the suggestion, if you see the link to what's in the foreword, you put it all together, and then when you get to these papers, you see them for what they are, and you get to almost the last paragraph, and oh, wow, now I've got the whole picture put together. Now think about, now that I know the whole picture of the Creator's sons, I see myself in this greatly expanded way. How every part of what I'm doing has a reciprocal expression relative to them. We're all part of this grand twofold motion that is the finite cosmos.
Just take a look at that in relation to the paucity of concept of, you know, you die and you go to heaven and it's done deal. Humanity is under a small idea about the.
And that's why you know, I'm speaking with the passion that I am. I want to see that contrast. See that contrast. How different is that? How much of a reformation of mind is it from that primitive estate to this? Behold, all things are becoming new. It changed. You have to change everything to make that transition.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, and now you know why you wouldn't have, you could muster the courage to do that. Why would you not want to do that? Why would you not want to make that transition from some, you know, that primitive estate to seeing yourself in this grand, dynamic, cosmic context.
Yeah. And they say Nebadon core of the finality at one point.
Yeah.
And now we have a way to really get why that is.
Yeah. Because all the finaliters, you know, their job, they need to synchronize with the Nebadon flavor, you know, of the Universal Mother. You know, along with all the other 700,000 flavors. Yeah, Baskin Robbins has got nothing on the grand universe. Okay, so I hope everyone get, you know, that paragraph's a great example of how if you begin to let the truth flow through you, how how few words it takes to transform everything. I mean, that's not very many words. That's a pretty tiny paragraph. Okay? The power of facts when truth is flowing through them. It only takes a couple of little facts. If you get truth flowing through them, it changes everything. All right, what else do they have here? Wrap this up.
In passing through the experience of revealing the seven master spirit wills of the Trinity, Creator Son has passed through the experience of revealing the will of the Supreme. In functioning as a revelator of the will of supremacy, Michael, together with all other master sons, has identified himself eternally with the Supreme. In this universe age, he reveals the Supreme and participates in the actualization of the sovereignty of supremacy. But in the next universe age, we believe he will be collaborating with the Supreme Being in the first experiential trinity for and in the universes of outer space.
We've fleshed that out. You know what we're talking about there now. You know, and the only way that he can do that, he has to synchronize. In the same way that you take, God the Mother is rooted in the Paradise Trinity, and you have the Trinity of Absoluteness and the Trinity of Ultimacy and the Trinity of Supremacy, and referring to supremacy here, that downstepped linkage. You've got these interfaces involved in this. It's not just the Paradise Trinity that makes that whole picture happen. There's also the Absolute Trinity and the Ultimate Trinity that are the bridging mechanisms here in this whole Trinity expression. We all are passing through that tunnel womb, of the first experiential Trinity to get up into the absonite. This whole phenomenon is enwombed in this complex Trinity expression. When you think of the Paradise Trinity existentially, creating this downflow of Trinity of Absoluteness, Trinity of Ultimacy, Trinity of Supremacy, then you have this Trinity-like upflow. But of course, they really, from an eternal viewpoint, they're both there. The first and second experiential Trinities are already there. That's in the infinite eternal ellipse. That's the whole structure. And you've you've been potentialized. Let's just say it that way. You've been potentialized into that grand picture, and you're slowly, over from here to eternity, going to experientially engage that whole picture.
So we were grandfounded in.
Yeah. Very good. All right.
Chris, we believe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Again, we've talked about that. Yeah. We always noticing how. I mean, two things in play. One. There's a number of times when you can tell. Sometimes you're not sure, but sometimes you can definitively tell that the revelators are pretty darn sure about it, but they can't mathematically prove it, and so they always hedge their language in that context. They're very, very non-presuming in their language, okay, in this regard. That's one of the things that's in play. So it may be very definitive, but they'll qualify the language, if they literally can't write down the proof, all the lines of the proof. The other times, they will be hesitant in their language because they're humble to their position in the picture of things. Gavalia is just a brilliant evening star. That's all he is. There's a heck of a lot that he really doesn't even have the ability to wrap his mind around. He does not have an adjuster like we do. So sometimes they're just being very honest and expressing, we just, don't understand this stuff.
So it's a faith expression.
Yeah, it's a faith expression. And it's also a challenge to you. Whenever you see those things, decide if it's that flavor and go, well, do what I have or what I'm trying to become, can I get get my mind wrapped around it in a way that revelator can't? Can it make sense to me, in an objective way, not a rationalization way? Sure, you can rationalize it if you're smart enough, but can I objectively recognize this where they can't? Does it seem just not like a rationalization to me at all when I reflect on it? It's like, no, I'm not rationalizing there. I mean, I haven't even really used my second adjutant. I just see it. It's just it's self-evident. Okay? Are you using your objective insight to see things? Are there things that you've discovered are self-evident and you've noticed, and look at the revelator actually was honest with me and said, that's not self-evident for me. I have to take that on faith. I have to trust my superiors. My superiors say it's so, and so I just, believe them. Well, I can't see it. It's not self-evident to me.
Okay?
Is it self-evident to you, though? Start challenging yourself to see if you can see that which they can't. You're journeying, to having a home world of Ascendington. A place where only beings like us can see some things there.
Right.
Yep.
They also have the potential to over-reveal something.
They do, and that's why they have they're working under a very tight, revelatory mandate, so that they don't go outside of those boundary lines. Yeah, they definitely could say, and a number of times they even say that, boy, I could say a lot more here. I know a lot about this, okay? I'm really clear on this part, but I can't say anything about it because I was told I couldn't,
Okay. I'm really disappointed that I can't tell you, sir.
Right. And some of those things that they could tell you, we can't see.
Right.
They may actually be, ones where it's flipped around the other way. But, and we just have to, I trust you. I have a personal relationship with you. I take it on faith that what you're telling me is so, but I can't see that.
It's not self-evident.
Yeah, not self-evident to me.
Could that be that they don't say is because it might skew our vision in a horizontal manner and fog the vertical?
Right. There's two. Basic dimensions to what you're thinking. There's that lateral thing.
Right.
This is a lateral thing. It's just going to, it's superfluous to the thing we're working on right now. This line we're trying to go up.
Yeah.
There's that. But there's also, this is on the line you're on, but it's way ahead, and it's really going to, you need to be present now.
Yeah.
You don't want to get, because now needs to be recognized, actualized, and realized. Okay, and if you're so heavenly minded, then you're no earthly good. So it's two different dimensions of, all right, so let's read the last one here. Oh, and by the way, that footnote there is going to get some discussion. So we're going to read this paragraph, and then we're going to there's going to be a gap. Okay.
We're going to have a gap in between.
Yeah, in between this paragraph and the thing in square brackets. Yes. Don't attach the square brackets to this paragraph. In other words. Okay.
Urantia is the sentimental shrine of all of Nebadon, the chief of 10 million inhabited worlds, the mortal home of Christ Michael, sovereign of all Nebadon, a Melchizedek minister to the realms, a system savior, an Adamic redeemer, a seraphic fellow, an associate of ascending spirits, a Marantia progressor, a son of man in the likeness of mortal flesh, and the planetary prince of Urantia. And your record tells the truth when it says that this same Jesus has promised sometime to return to the world of his terminal bestowal, the world of the cross. This paper...
Yep. Yeah, you try, man. You will fail. just a couple little things here. I just want to point it out again because we've stressed it so many times, you know, about this issue of fear not, about the future of this planet. Okay, notice again here about why you should fear not. Okay, first of all, it says. It's not just one of the 10 million inhabited worlds. It is the chief of the 10 million inhabited worlds now. Okay? It is the chief world in all of Nebadon.
Oh, Chris, what does that mean?
That means that it's not going to blow up, okay?
It's not global warming.
It's here to stay. It's here to stay.
It seems like the sentimental shrine is like a subjective standard.
Yeah.
I can understand that. The chief of 10 million seems to be like a category.
Right. It's a very object. That's why I'm pointing it out. It's a sentimental shrine. No. This is a factual, objective statement. It is the chief of the 10 million worlds, period. Okay? So forget about all the fear mongering about the future of this world. Okay, fear not.
How does that guarantee that nothing's going to happen to this planet?
Lots of things are going to happen to this planet, and you may die in one of those things. But the planet is going to be here at eternity. Don't worry about it.
It's the small stuff.
Okay.
So the asteroid that we need to move.
If an asteroid needs to be moved, beings that can move whole galaxies can move an asteroid. You know, chemical spills are well within the domain of a master physical controller. Okay, they can encircuit entire stars, for Christ's sake. Okay, I mean, we all need to back off on all of this bottom-up thinking. You know, see our world in the top-down view. In the top-down view, what is it? It is the chief of 10 million worlds. When you take the 10 million worlds and you look at them in the top-down view, the very first one you see is this one. Okay? That's the difference between the Flatlanders and their bottom-up viewpoint, okay, and the truth. Okay, if the planet had, you know, with all of the spiritual consciousness, all the people that they think they know what unity is about, if there really was a unity viewpoint, you wouldn't have all this fear. Okay, and the unity viewpoint, if you truly have the unity point, you'd know about God the Mother for one thing, and there's no one knows anything about God the Mother, and you'd know things like this. You'd fear not, because you'd know this is the chief of 10 million worlds. Okay, it's the first one you see. It's at the top of the pyramid, okay? It's fine.
Yeah, so we should fear not. Can we run back?
Yeah.
And together with that, we appreciate the mother enough to take care of
her. Yeah, right. See, and you see, right? Yeah, you begin to see it, not in a panic of preservation mode, but you begin to see it in a patient, calm, fearless conservation mode. Okay? You begin to strike step with the conservator of the local universe, the Creative Mother Spirit. Okay? Just the fact that the words preservation and conservation have become synonyms speaks to this. Okay? Preservation is a bottom-up viewpoint. You can't preserve a forest. But you can conserve a forest. You know? And, this is bringing in the peace that passes all understanding. the top-down viewpoint. See it in its true nature and fear not. And now go about doing good for the earth or for yourself or for your fellow man. But don't do it because you're driven by fear and you think that you were put here to save the earth. You know, to preserve it, you know, and you know, and it's like, well, the thing that really would help me to preserve it is if I could get rid of the cancer, the humans that are on it. And, you know, you get all these stupid thoughts that come into your head and you get in that mode. Okay.
Now, the, we'd be able to figure out if we were the last of the 10 million, let alone the first.
Right, let alone the first. Okay, and then the other thing, why did he promise to return? Didn't we just talk extensively about, he definitely put the exclamation point on the seven bestowals. Okay, is he going to come back because he didn't quite achieve synchrony with God the Supreme? He screwed that up. He's got to come back and finish that job.
There's
no.
One thing I still want to do.
We now know with very clear that that's all done.
It's done.
So why would he say he's going to come back?
Because he loves us.
Well, there's that.
Celebrate.
But all of Bestowal Sons love their worlds, and that's why they come back, you know, and you get to enlighten life. But, you know, we all know that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about the normal mode, okay? He's going to come back because there's another thing that was happening here. He wasn't just doing this seven descending bestowals. He was also doing the bestowal sun job.
Right.
That always happens on a world after a magisterial sun and after the biologic uplifter. You know, I mean, okay, he jumped the gun. We haven't had a magisterial sun yet. You know, we haven't had a mindal uplifter. You know, so he comes as a spiritual uplifter. You know, and there's very little, if anything, he could really do.
Right.
I mean, he's way ahead of himself on that one. He's got to come back because he's got to finish the job as the bestowal son. Okay, that's why he has to come back. Yeah.
So then there has to be a magisterial son first.
Or some other thing, you know, like the revelators say, you know, I mean, it's a wild card world. I mean, but if things happened in a normal sort of a mode, yeah, you would say that. We're going to get a magisterial son next, and then he would come. But remember, we've talked about this a million times. Everyone knows that he could throw another wild card in the mix, and somehow you could make up for that in a different way.
Wouldn't that be the first time?
You know, you bring in an unrevealed local universe son or something, or an unrevealed paradise son. I mean, anything could happen.
They could come together.
Yeah, anything could happen.
All kinds of stuff.
But anyway, the basic point is that's why he promised to come. Come again. Not because he somehow hasn't finished what we've been reading about in this paper. He has finished what we've been reading about in this paper. Okay.
This paper, depicting the seven bestowals of Christ Michael, is the 63rd of a series of presentations sponsored by numerous personalities narrating the history of Urantia down to the time of Michael's appearance on earth in the likeness of mortal flesh. These papers were authorized by a Nebadon commission of 12 acting under the direction of Mantusia. Did I say that right?
Mantusia.
Melchizedek. We indicted these narratives and put them in the English language by a technique authorized by our superiors in the year A.D. 1935 of Urantia time.
Okay, now, there's one little thing I want to take this opportunity to bring out. And for those of you who haven't really allowed yourselves to notice this little detail yet, the book, was brought into existence, or I should say the papers, not the book. The papers were brought into existence via three different revelatory commissions. Okay, part one of the book, there is a commission of 24 at the super universe level, orbiton level. Commission of 24. The chief of that commission is a divine counselor that writes those initial papers. Okay, so you've got that revelatory commission that's behind part one, oversees part one. Okay, this revelatory commission of 12, Nebadon, so now we're going to drop down to the local universe level. So parts, both parts one, two and three are overseen by this revelatory commission of 12, with Mantusha Melchizedek as, you know, as the director of that commission of 12. Okay? And then part 4 has a third revelatory commission. There are 12 midwayers in that revelatory commission. Okay? And there is a Melchizedek who is directing that, along with the head of the loyal midwayers. Okay, but the primary one, you know, to connect it kind of to the big picture is the Melchizedek, okay, directing that. There's a long-standing misunderstanding that I don't think anyone has ever, you know, put together about this. Okay, when you go to the next paper, you know, the first paper in part 4, you know, it says, assigned by Gabriel to supervise the restatement of the life of Michael when on Urantia and in the likeness of mortal flesh, I, the Melchizedek director of the Revelatory Commission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that first paper, paper 120, is written by that Melchizedek who's directing that commission. Okay, if you look in your table of contents, you'll see that the table of contents says that the author of this paper is Mantusha Melchizedek. You know, no. Not Mantusha Melchizedek. Okay? We're talking about a different revelatory commission here.
Right.
It's a different Melchizedek. It's like, well, what Melchizedek is it? Okay, you go to the second paper of part 4. I won't read it. And the last paragraph of paper 121 and the first paragraph of paper 121 gives you the clue. Okay, in exactly the same way. That's why I won't read the last paragraph. First paragraph says, acting under the supervision of a commission of 12 members of the United Brotherhood of Urantia Midwayers, conjointly sponsored by the presiding head of our order and the Melchizedek of record, I am the secondary midwayer, you know, okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, okay, and he writes that midwayer, you know, speaking there. Okay, the Melchizedek of record. Okay, and they use the exact same expression, the Melchizedek of record, when they refer to the director of this third commission in the last paragraph of that paper. Who is the Melchizedek of record? Yes. Machaventa Melchizedek is the Melchizedek of record. Okay? I mean, you know, you say, well, how do you know it's not another one? Well,
because they're referring
all the Melchizedeks are of record on Salvington. You know, look up of record. You'll find the sentence in the book where they say all the Melchizedeks are of record, okay, on Salvington. Okay? It's our record. So the midwayer is talking. It's the Melchizedek of record. The one that's recorded. The one you know.
Yeah.
Machaventa wrote that first. Wrote that first paper, not Mantusha.
Why does it say Mantusha then?
Because the person who wrote that, who put together that table of contents, screwed up.
Oh.
They presume. Yeah.
This is a Nebadon Commission of 12. Are you referring to the Melchizedek receivers there or different?
Different. Yeah. That would be a different, yeah. I would think that there would be beings besides Melchizedek. Melchizedek's on that commission, just like there would be beings besides the divine counselors on the super universe commission. But just, you know, just in case, you know, again, the book is always really good about this. Just carefully observe, you know, don't rationalize. You can rationalize this Mantusha Melchizedek, and that's what's been done. Like we went through last time with the whole in the manger thing. Stop rationalizing, step back, and just observe. Observe what it says. Recognize what it says. Okay.
They're appealing to our records.
In the Machaventa Melchizedek paper, and let's see if I can find it. I know it's here. I'm just flipping to it. I should have found it beforehand. Where in the heck is it that they mention? Where is it? I'm up in... Oh, here it is. So I'm in paper, what paper is this? Paper 93, section 4, which is old single column, page 1018. You have the following sentence. It is of record, quote, Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, end quote. Okay, that's the record. They literally have the record in the book. Okay, it is of record. Okay, the Melchizedek of record, that one sentence in the Old Testament that didn't get changed, you know, into Abraham talking to God. The one sentence that's the record of the Melchizedek that came here. The Melchizedek of record. Just like Machiavendi Melchizedek helped with, you know, the Universal Unity paper. He wrote the first paper of Part 4. He's the one that was the director of that third revelatory commission. That's Machiavendi.
Chris, now, was the book originally going to end where we just ended?
That's all stories, you don't know. When all is said and done, there's this many papers in the book, and that's all that's important. You know, and despite the fact that there was all kinds of a procedure and a process to bring this thing into play, there were three different revelatory commissions, you know, and when all is said and done, you have something that's perfectly synchronized. And it's perfectly synchronized not because they all sat there and constantly were, it's like, now what word did you use on, okay? Okay, that's not the way these three revelatory commissions got themselves synchronized, okay? They synchronized with the truth, with the cosmic harmony, each of the three of them separately. And when you do that, you find yourself coincidentally on the same page. The same way that your guardian seraphim and your adjuster don't sit there and compare notes constantly and, you know, and we got to have a meeting, you know, about, no, they never have meetings. They never talk, you know, but everything they do is perfectly in sync. Okay. Again, the only way that you even think about that possibility to understand it is from a top-down view. Bottom-up viewers are trying to think, well, this has got to be micromanaged. Okay, it's all about the individualities and all this separation between them, and I got to micromanage their connectivity. No, there's a top-down. There's a unity. They are part of a whole. They're connected. It happens naturally. Because there's an individuality of the whole. Because there's God the Mother. See, all of this is tied to the understanding that there are two overarching facets. And if you don't have the two, you're just bound to get off. Even in these simple little things like who authored the first paper of Part 4, you know, if you're just trying to go on the individuality of the parts, God the Father, he's the individuality of the parts. He makes you an absolutely distinct part. Okay? And he's the individuality at the core of that part. You know, he is your nucleus, especially once you've fused with your adjuster. There's an individuality of the whole. The gateway to the unity viewpoint. And the gateway to a more intuitive relationship with the revelation, where you don't rationalize the revelation. You recognize the revelation. Okay? You engage it in a way that it really has not been engaged. That's what we're trying to do. Okay? And just to see that that this thing that started out so curious, this notion of God the Mother, how we brought it full circle by the time we get to the end of this Pentateuch, okay, on God the Mother. Okay, now you should be able to go back to the forward like we're going to next week and start anew. Behold, all things will be becoming new. As we begin to try to engage the revelation more objectively, okay, because we now not only can think about the parts, but we do it in the context of the whole so that we don't rationalize the parts. We recognize how the parts fit into the whole. Okay, that's what you're going to do as a finaliter, helping the Master Sons. He sees a part. You see the whole. You can help him to see how his part fits into the whole. So let's do it. We're going to start the forward next week. And you all know, as soon as we get to section one of the forward and we get to functional levels of total deity, you know there's going to be a new chart sitting here. The infinite eternal ellipse. We'll have the infinite eternal ellipse to engage it in. So,
is that a chart that's not even up on the website yet?
Nope, not up on the website. It's a secret. But it's now literally, you know, it's not just an 8.5 by 11 PDF. It's actually on foam core.
Oh, foam
core. Got some density to it.
Foot and a half by 2 feet. So it's ready to go. So
you don't have to hedge anymore.